Welcome to PostStatus Draft, the official podcast for PostStatus, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, Joe and I discuss WordPress core and website security. If you enjoy this podcast, you can get a lot more quality news and analysis from the PostStatus Club multiple times per week. Check out our current club members, site partners, and join the club on our website at poststatus.com/club. You'll be joining more than 650 wonderful club members, and you'll never miss important WordPress news again. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, Pagely. Pagely offers best-in-class managed WordPress hosting powered by the Amazon Cloud, the internet's most reliable infrastructure. PostStatus is proudly hosted by Pagely. For more information on Pagely, go to pagely.com, and thank you to Pagely for being a PostStatus partner. Now here's our show. Hey everybody, I'm Brian, and I'm the editor of PostStatus.
And I'm Joe, a co-founder and the CTO of HumanMade. And welcome to the PostStatus Draft Podcast. And today we're going to be talking about WordPress and website security.
Yeah, so we all know security is important. However, that doesn't necessarily translate to good security practices. So we figured we'd talk about how to approach website security, both from a core/distributed product perspective, and also for site owners. So I guess we should start with how WordPress core approaches the concept of security and writing secure code.
Yeah, that would make sense. I guess I don't know, like what are you thinking that entails?
Well, I think there's probably a few concepts that core developers approach are used to approach this. You know, stuff like sanitize early, escape late.
Yeah, I guess the we can talk on sanitizing quickly and escaping, that kind of stuff. So I guess like the core idea is that your program is secure as long as it's not doing anything with anything that you don't know about. So if your program just, you know, outputs hello today and doesn't do anything else, then there's not much to play with there, right? There's mm-hmm. nothing to manipulate to for security kind of concerns. But once you're dealing with you know, user input and data output that was created by users, you know, which WordPress inherently is as a content management system, then you suddenly have this huge variable that you don't know anything about the data, and things can be a lot more unpredictable because of the data can come in very, you know, large amount of different shapes and sizes. So that's really what sanitizing escaping is all about, is fundamentally trying to make all of that input and output data that you don't really, you know, isn't predetermined, that's user generated, to make that clean and safe and being the type of data that you expect, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking, I guess we are specifically talking about WordPress itself. Unfortunately, security flaws can happen at pretty much any layer of your web stack, I guess. And
this is one problem with security, is you're only as strong as the weakest component or link. So
yeah, and they can all combine as well. So like one might be the way they get access, and then it gives them an opening to do another thing. And
yep,
when you combine all that together, it can make things pretty challenging. And when you see, what do they call those, like you know, those after the fact accounts of how a vulnerability,
like a postmortem.
Yeah, postmortem for a security bug is often really, especially in WordPress core, because it's a pretty secure product these days. Typically, the way they take advantage of something is to string together a bunch of seemingly small things that they combine to turn into the end vulnerability that they might say something like, you know, any subscriber can do this or whatever. And it's usually an extremely creative path about how they get to that. So It's probably not.
Yeah, definitely. Like
it's probably not. You're just leaving a form field wide open, or something like that.
Yeah. It's like you're accidentally output your password on the login page or something. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. You're right in that it's quite often like what will be very small things that you get to chain together, and a lot of those things aren't necessarily even considered insecurity things. I guess like with WordPress, let's say. You know, there's certain information exposed that you don't necessarily consider to be a security issue, like login usernames or something like that of authors on the front end of your site. But if that is coupled with, you know, I guess the brute forcing is a very simple example of that. Just having that information publicly exposed creates that attack vector a lot easier as if compared to as if you're being more locked down. But, you know, security is a complete trade-off with kind of the kind of user experience and putting limits on things fundamentally. So it's always a give and take, I guess, between ideally you'd have, you know, the admin would be, you just type in your name and then you know, go to the admin and you're logged in as that person. Now, obviously, you know, being that convenient has its downsides that anybody can just type in anybody else's name. So then we introduce passwords. And like, it's always a balance between we can have a super secure, but it's going to be incredibly inconvenient. And we don't really want to go that far. So where exactly is that line?
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned actually something that I've always kind of considered security theater with exposing usernames, because, you know, it's the type of thing where a username is pretty easy to find. However, it's the type of, there are certain components where Core probably could do more. For instance, like every piece of WordPress, every time WordPress Core ships, the username admin is already there. So that's a known thing that hackers can utilize. And if a website owner hasn't, you know, removed the admin user, then they can reliably run a script on millions of WordPress websites and have some percentage, probably quite high. Knowing that admin is a user. So to me, like, that's the type of thing that WordPress could probably do to improve security.
Yeah, on that specific case, then when you install WordPress now, then you choose your username, so there is no...
We have made that adjustment. I haven't even noticed.
Yeah, that was done some time ago. But there are other things, like there's a lot of, I guess, what you just term kind of security via obscurity, in that, you know, you can find out the version of WordPress and the WordPress team have always been quite firm in their stance that obscuring things isn't a great, you know, strategy for security. And so, you know, it's quite easy to detect versions of WordPress via the README or header tags and things like that, which, you know, not telling somebody the version of your software doesn't make the software any more secure. But realistically, it, you know, does help in terms of avoiding, like you're saying, those bots that are attacking huge percentages of the web. But I kind of, you know, generally agree that I definitely wouldn't want to rely on any obscurity, like hiding usernames, to actually improve security. But there's a practical side, which is, you know, if you are going to have a security vulnerability, and, you know, there's no such thing as 100% secure software, then having more obscurity is going to practically help you from getting hacked via a more automated kind of system.
Mm-hmm. So one of the principles that, or a couple of the principles that you see people mention when they talk about writing secure code, especially for distributed products. One is don't make assumptions about the data that you're dealing with. And then number two is don't trust any of the data that you could be being delivered. So for example, if you're expecting a telephone number from a custom field or something, and you didn't, you know, you don't have direct control of that custom field, then you need to make sure you're not assuming you're going to get a telephone number, and you need to ensure that this is formatted like a telephone number before you get it.
Right.
So that's just a super simple example of not trusting the data, even though you expect it. And you're also not assuming that it is what it says it is.
And I think where a lot of people fall down here is they think they, Again, that user-submitted data is not trusted, but it's important, I think, to make the point that all data coming in is not trusted. So if you're pulling in data from Twitter or from Facebook or some other API or RSS feeds, you need to remember that that is also data not under your control, so it should be treated as if it could be potentially malicious. If one of your partners gets their site hacked and they're now pushing malicious JavaScript over their RSS feed or something, then you need to be handling that. So it's throughout the whole stack. Even when you're pulling data from your database, typically in WordPress, then you should be not making too many assumptions about that as well. So you kind of have a two-tiered approach. If I try and filter everything as much as I can when it goes into the database, and then when it comes back out, then I also treat it with a good amount of caution.
Mm-hmm. And obviously most of these types of thing checks that you're doing this like right before it goes back into the database at a minimum. So Joe, one of my questions is, when you're looking at code someone else wrote, how are you trying to identify potential security flaws?
Yeah, like so a human made, for example, like all of the third party plugins we'll use in our hosting or just on client builds and stuff, then we kind of review all of that. So I'm fairly used to reading through thousands of lines of code sometimes. And there's definitely a lot of kind of like telltale things that you can catch. I would typically, I'm reading through it line by line, but not in such detail that I'm comprehending exactly what the program is doing. You don't really typically need to go to that level. You just need to be able to, like, whenever you see a super global, like, $_get or post is used, then, like, as soon as it's accessed and assigned to a variable, it should be passed through a sanitizing function. So you kind of, can scan quite easily to see those kind of things. Anything that is doing remote requests elsewhere or pulling in external data, again, anything that's to do with file access is often kind of a big mm-hmm. thing to look at. So that's kind of the...
And that's because same concept with files, right? With files as data, if not trusting what's in the file.
Yeah, there's that. There's like quite often I see people like manually implementing their own upload mechanism. So they're... directly using the PHP move uploaded file function. So they're missing out on a lot of the checks that WordPress will do on types of files and things like that. So that is kind of that's kind of the input side of things. Then the output is a little more easy. Like you're really looking for, you should never really be doing like an echo statement without some form of escaping function directly after it. Like that's a 90% kind of rule. So that one can be fairly easy just to, you look through all of the HTML where you have any code output. And if you just happen to have it's echo get post meta directly and it's not passing that through the correct escaping function, then that's kind of a red flag that needs fixing. One of the definitely much more unknown, unpracticed ones is to be escaping the translation strings. So when you're instead of doing, my mind's blanking now. So instead of doing like _e for translate and echo a string, and then you would just pass it any string and your domain. The problem with that is if you had a malicious string in your translation file, then when it gets echoed, then you could get JavaScript output onto the page or something. So that's where the esc_html_e functions come in, or escatre_e. Mm-hmm. That's to escape a translation for output in an attribute, so it's able to do the correct sanitization there, and that's something that isn't practiced that much, and I think that maybe it will get a bit more if any exploits kind of get out into the wild. I guess now it's not super easy probably to get a malicious string into a translation file because you've got to submit it to somebody and then the person reviewing it has to not see it, but I think maybe, if you manage your own translations aren't always that technical, so maybe it's easier to get something through.
And if you manage your own translations and they don't go through WordPress in any way, or like the WordPress.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's also like with translations, because they're output across your theme in different places, you could potentially craft different, like you could have half an exploit in one translation stream or half in the other, and then when they're put together in the theme on output, then they could do something malicious. So there's like a huge amount of kind of potential, you know, very quite tricky things to handle there. So escaping translations is if you're not doing all the other escaping, get on that, and definitely like that's very important. But if you feel like you're doing everything but you're not doing translations, then maybe look at doing that.
So it's easy to talk about escaping, sanitizing, and validation all in the same breath, basically. And you mentioned escaping functions, but generally escaping is making sure the data that you're handling is safe for display, right? So like, can we talk about the difference between each of these? Like, because sanitizing, you know, that's right. That's before you put it in the database. And
right. Typically. So the, I guess maybe one thing that I find quite important is on escaping, there's no way to do automatic escaping. And it's probably worth mentioning the reason for why that is. Because it would make sense, right? Why not just, you know, overload the echo function and escape everything on output? So really what you're doing when you're escaping is you're giving the some function a context of whereabouts it's displaying data, so it'll know what is safe to display in that context. So the context that you have in the escaping functions are ATRA for escatra, which means the data here is in an HTML attribute. So then the function knows, okay, well, I can't put anything that has quotes in it because it might have, you know, if it's in an attribute, it's going to break outside of the attribute. On the other hand, you have esc.html. So then you're saying this data is going inside an HTML tag. So, you know, quotes are okay in this context. Esc.url, then you're saying this data is a URL, so it knows the character set that can be allowed in that context. So that's why you can't do automatic escaping, and that's why all of those different escaping functions, and it's kind of important that you use the right ones. If you use esc.html in an attribute, you're not making that secure, because you can escape the attribute, and maybe you can add an on click or something like that to the button. So that wouldn't actually make it necessarily more secure. That's kind of the escaping side of things. And then the flip side is sanitization. This is kind of the terminology that I'm most comfortable with anyway. And sanitization is about like sanitizing and cleaning data when it comes in. From, you know, different sources, and making that data how you want it to be, in terms of like what you're expecting it to be. Is it a string? Is it a number? Things like that. So that's where the functions like sanitize text field, sanitize key, those, you know, there's oddly named ones like SQL raw is technically a sanitizing function. WP cases or WP filler cases is a sanitizing function. So again,
I always
all of those
call that
are
cases.
I
don't know how to pronounce it.
I say cases, but I could be wrong on that as well. It's probably when you read code. And like absint and things. So that's about like you're getting some data in, and you know, like that it should be a number. So you just pass it for a function to make sure it definitely is a number. There's like a lot of cases where like sanitize text field, which is a very broad sanitizing function, but, you know, has a lot of heuristics in it about, you know, you won't be able to put like a script tag, or you can't put multi-line through sanitize text field. But that's a bit of a, like, I don't know what else to sanitize this data with. I'll just call it sanitize text field. So that one's quite broad. But absint or something, like, you know that if somebody... Right, it's got to be an integer. And the reason you're protecting against that is a few things. Like when you're passing that around internally to PHP functions, you want to make sure the data is what you expect it to be. So if it could be a different type, like it's an array of values and you pass it to a function that behaves differently with an array, and you didn't make sure that it was an array but it wasn't a string, then it's going to do different things. And once an attacker is looking at your code, because maybe it's open source, or maybe, you know, you've sold them the plugin or something, then they can really work back through all of that and, you know, really craft a special request to make to your site or your plugin to cause that exploit to be a problem.
Yeah, so when a hacker is looking at stuff like this, there's multiple ways that they can go about things. I mean, one is they could be trying to utilize this you know, a vulnerability in order to get access, or they can do it, be utilizing it in order to execute the malicious code that they have on hand. One of the most common ways that you see people taking advantage of vulnerabilities is tricking output, basically. Is that the best way to say it? Like, where you're, like, one I see a good bit when you see, like, that a vulnerability exists is, it's basically you're outputting PHP and it's got a mix of like single and double quotes, is what you mentioned when you're talking about HTML mm-hmm. attributes. So then all of a sudden, because the hacker was able to put something, say, in a variable that the variable or the function using that variable wasn't expecting, then it somehow broke out of the function completely, closed it off, and then like spit its own JavaScript out instead. And then when that function gets run, say on the front end or in a form or, you know, wherever, then it breaks out of what the expected behavior is, and then their malicious code is allowed to run and do whatever it does.
Right. And that can come in several forms, because the thing is, you don't even need to be able to submit data to a website and save it on the website for other people, because you can, like, let's say you had a search, like the classic one is the search form, right, where you pass mm-hmm. The, you know, query parameter S equals, and then, you know, you put in some JavaScript in there. Now, you don't need that to be saved to the page. You can just, you know, send the owner of the website an email saying, oh, cool, saw this page on your website, and then you give them a hyperlink and they click it not knowing, and now they load up the page with the executed JavaScript and it sends their logs and cookies to the person that sent you the email. So there is, you know, it doesn't even need to be saved on the website necessarily for XSS. Scary how many potential different vectors there are for this kind of stuff, I think.
Yeah, so that's why, especially for distributed code, WordPress and WordPress plugins, then you have to be really careful about what you're doing. But also for a high or even medium important site, then if you get specifically targeted by a hacker, then they can probably find a way to get in, but it might require some stupidity on your part. Or just like mm-hmm. lack of not stupidity. This is stupidity I'm personally very capable of. So I'm using myself as an example.
You're including yourself in that group.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, like, you know, be judgmental towards others, because I could totally do this. But like where they could take advantage of the vulnerability and utilize you as part of their scheme, like with what you just mentioned, for instance.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about that concept, though, of like broad-based attacks, like where they're just like, you know, hoping yeah. something will stick on a certain percentage of websites versus a targeted attack towards one website.
Yeah, like the techniques are usually, I mean, they're similar in that, you know, there's a lot of automation to begin with to identify vulnerabilities, but like the motivations are probably quite different. You know, a broad attack attacking a million websites is probably more interested in being able to, you know, redirect the users of all those websites to some other malicious site that they're getting paid for referral traffic for, or something like that. Like, there's a lot of, you know, just money-making things where you're making a bit of money per website that you happen to be able to hack.
Like a set.
kind of, right, exactly. And those will be using, like, known exploits on older versions of WordPress, or like Tim Thumb exploits and things like that, you know, where maybe it's just firing out to pretty much you can guess a domain name on the internet these days, and you know, you've got a 25% chance that it's a WordPress site. So there's a huge surface there to throw requests against and try and hack. The targeted hack is a bit, sorry, carry on.
I was going to say WordPress has a big target on its back for that type of attack, because there's few technologies that you can target and have that huge of a percentage of the internet that becomes your oyster.
Right, exactly. It's kind of an easy target in that regard, in that, you know, it's so big, so you know where to, you know, look. But the latter, attack, I guess, is going to be from somebody that specifically wants to hack this one website. And maybe, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, quite a lot
political. They're about, like, you know, defacing competition or whatever, or you know, that they're kind of like, I don't know, a bit more personal, I guess. And those are the ones that are definitely a lot more scary, I'd say. Like, it's pretty easy to protect yourself against a bot that's going to come by and, you know, if it can't hack your site, it's not going to care. Move on to the millions of other websites that it probably can hack. When somebody wants to hack, you know, your website or the website that you're responsible for, and they're going to make, you know, significant amount of effort in kind of picking through everything that you've done, that's really where you're, you know, you need to have been using the best practices everywhere, because it's quite easy when you're a, you know, professional security researcher or whatever, and you know exactly what you're doing, and you're going to use those skills in a negative way, then you're going to be able to move quite quickly in finding where things look wrong and where you don't appear to be doing any escaping, or maybe you're doing a little bit, but it's not quite enough, so they can tie that to something else. And that's really where you're going to see, you know, how solid your security is. Like, luckily, the web is a big place, and you do have some safety in numbers if you do have some insecure site. But as soon as you're trying to, like, presumably you're trying to get your website or your client's websites to be much bigger and better and more more eyes on them, more attention, then it's kind of important that that you get this right from the beginning.
Yeah, and these are typically the type of situations you see when you see big e-commerce sites get hacked, for instance, where someone, probably a human being, actually did the hack. And they did it with the intent of either scaring off customers for that company, or maybe, you know, trying to go and sniff credit card entries or all sorts of things that they could be doing. And it, when your site gets bigger and you become more of a target, it becomes even more important to try to lock down the potential attack vectors.
Yeah, exactly.
So from a back to the code standpoint again, this kind of comes up with this regard is, you see a lot of issues in security with nonces. And can you describe, cause I feel like this is a part of, you know,
code that people get confused
with.
Yeah, right. Definitely. Like, you've got, you know, you're escaping, sanitizing, nonces, permission checks, stuff like that. So the idea of a nonce is, I think, number once is kind of the where that term comes from. And that the idea was that whenever you would show an action to a user, it would have a token on it that could only be used once. Now, in WordPress, they don't actually quite work that way. You can use a nonce more than once. But the basic idea is that everything that you can do that is like an action that's going to actually change data or whatever, is going to have a little extra query parameter or something in the form to make it so it's only the current user that can have generated and performed that action. So you might be wondering, why does that make sense? The basic exploit here would be if, let's say, you could, when you went to the admin and you clicked trash on a post, the link there would be, you know, it would be like admin.php question mark action equals trash post post ID equals whatever the ID is, which kind of makes sense. And you could add a permissions check when you click that to say, make sure the current logged in user can delete this post, and they would be able to, and that's all fine. Now, the problem arises when I would grab that link, you know, I would generate that link and I'd send it to you, Brian, and I'd put a post status domain there, /wp-admin/admin.php question mark, yada, yada, yada. And I'd get you to click this fairly easily because I'd probably send you an HTML email and, you know, I'd be able to change the text of the link rather than where the link's pointing. You would click it and then you delete a post off your site. So that's the general thing that a nonce is protecting against, is making sure that the person or the action being performed was actually, the link was generated by that person as well, rather than somebody else that could have sent it to them. So it's the same principle with forms as well, because though forms, you have to click a button, you don't necessarily, to send that type of request, you don't have to have clicked that button. Somebody else could have had a form on their website that points to your admin and has all the same form fields. So you click the button on their site thinking that it's going to send them a contact request, what that actually is a form pointing to your site that's going to add them an admin user on your site or something. So that's why you need to use a WP nonce field in your forms for that reason.
So a nonce can be used for forms and actions in an administrative standpoint, but it can also be to verify other things. Like, I think recently the emails that WordPress sends were hardened, weren't they? So that, like, you couldn't send a password reset email to any old email address. Do you remember this?
So I think this is, if I could be wrong on this. Yeah, I'm probably not familiar enough with that to talk about it,
point being, you could set a nonce on even stuff like that, like a password reset email.
Yeah, like the underlying function is just WP create nonce, and basically you're creating a number that is only going to verify if the same user generated and is the one that's logged in when verifying that number.
So let's see. Are there any other major things from a product perspective that you'd like to mention?
The only like coding thing that I feel a little bit bad about not mentioning is like database query,
like WPDB.
Yeah. So this is the usual, like the classic PHP vulnerability typically is SQL injection. So this is where maybe you want to like add a user to your users table. So you do like insert into users, and then you would say, you know, the name equals this name, and that name would be coming from a form, and you didn't do anything special. So the name somebody puts in actually is like end quote, semicolon, and then drop users from, you know, users table. So what's going to happen is when this query is like compiled, as it were, like once the strings are all added together, it turns it into two queries. That's the first one's just going to like, you know, end the query, not doing anything. The second one's going to delete your users table. So this is where SQL preparing comes in, which basically is like a form of sanitization in that you're sanitizing the data going into your queries to make sure that they don't have, you know, they aren't escaping out of the query that you mean them to be, but the function that you always want to use here is WPDB prepare, or the method I should say, on that class. Like when I'm reviewing code, like any,
if you don't see prepare, you freak out.
yeah, pretty much. Like any direct database query that has any variables in it, whether a user generated or not, should be using prepare. So that's a pretty big red flag. There is a very subtle thing in prepare, which is a bit of a unknown kind of issue, or little known, is the first arg. So prepare works that you pass it like your database query string is the first one, then all the params after that are like your placeholder ones that you've put in that string. However, the function works in such a way that if the first parameter you pass after the query string is an array, it actually takes all of the values in that array and passes them into your query in all of the position arguments, which you aren't necessarily always expecting. So if that first parameter there itself wasn't also sanitized, then a user could potentially pass an array and change the whole query. So point being, make sure that you sanitize the variables that you're also passing into prepare. Because even if you're saying, you know, where the ID equals and then a digit, and you're not sanitizing that first parameter that's going to be in the digit, then you could be in trouble because it could be an array and it could still, again, do things that you didn't want. So the main, takeaway is just sanitize as much as you possibly can about data that's coming in.
Yeah. That's scary. Okay. So
yeah, don't think about security too much. You'll get scared.
I mean, it's worth mentioning.
Possibly the worst advice I've ever given on the podcast.
It's worth mentioning that most websites probably have vulnerabilities. It's a matter of whether they've been exposed or like outed.
I would guess, you know, if I had to put a number on it, I'd probably say like 80-90% of websites have definitely got a vulnerability.
Yeah, maybe even a known vulnerability. It's probably higher in terms of how what percentage of websites have some vulnerability possible.
Right. Like the like I said, definitely never.
All code has
nothing
bugs.
Is 100% secure. Yeah, exactly. And bugs mean security issues because that's you know
that's
pretty
what
much, you
that's
know,
pretty much what a bug is.
Yeah, it's an unintended.
So I want to talk a little bit about once you've been hacked and that kind of stuff. But first, I want to mention a Postatus partner. And our Postatus partner this week is Pagely. Pagely is a managed WordPress host, the first managed WordPress host. I host Postatus on Pagely, and Pagely helps the world's biggest brands scale and secure WordPress. It's a good partner to have on a week we're talking about security because your host is a big element of your security strategy. They're really who's going to help you keep your server and your underlying systems up to date. We're talking about keeping WordPress itself up to date, and hosts can definitely do stuff for keeping your WordPress install secure. For instance, they can patch vulnerabilities across their systems before the code is, or before the software itself is even up to date, but also your underlying stuff. So like making sure PHP is up to date, making sure you know your Linux systems are up to date and all sorts of other things. MySQL, making sure various libraries that are included have security vulnerabilities patched as quick as possible. That's the type of stuff that your host can do. That's the type of stuff Pagely does. So thank you to Pagely for being a Postatus partner.
I think the like we were saying earlier, it only takes one exploit somewhere up the stack, and if you're don't have a host that is looking after that kind of stuff, then you know you can do all of the WordPress security you want in the world, but it's not going to help if they've never updated to a version of secure PHP or something like that. So
So now that we're getting into actually getting hacked, I've seen plenty of hacked websites over the years. However, it was only in the past couple of months that I experienced my first time where the hacker was a human being, not a bot, where the site just got hacked. And I actually discovered that the hack was going on while the hacker was still doing stuff. And I literally had like a tiny battle with them.
It sounds scary.
it was scary, but I wouldn't really say this in a situation where it was a super high profile event, but it was kind of fun.
Got some adrenaline out of it.
It wasn't, there was an adrenaline rush. I wouldn't call it fun. But what happened, I still don't know exactly where they got in, although I did, there were probably enough like out of date plugins or whatever that it made it understandable. But I saw an email for a password reset. So they had obviously gotten access somehow, and it maybe it was through email because of the password reset thing.
It was like a notification that your password had been changed?
As an admin, I got a notification that another admin's password was reset. Requested.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
That a reset was requested.
Do you get that from WordPress by default?
Yeah. So for Postatus... Oh, on Postatus, for instance, this did not happen on Postatus, just for FYI. but on Postatus, I get an email anytime any user requests a reset for their password, which is a telling event in its own right because it's interesting to know about users. But in this situation, it turned out to give me the heads up that someone was being malicious because it was highly unlikely that the administrator who had requested the password reset truly needed one. So I immediately hopped onto the database, literally to just look at the user. And sure enough, the user's email address had been changed. So someone got access to the database, changed the email, did the password reset, and it was giving them access to the administrative side of WordPress to where I don't know if files were editable or not, but if they were, Like if they could go into the file editor, they could have put malicious code directly in the file editor as an admin and have had their way with the website. So this, but this was a human being that was doing it. And I had to go back and forth with him a couple of times to knock him out quick enough. And then I...
You were moving as quick as you could.
Yeah, and I contacted the host to block all IP addresses that weren't mine. And that's what finally did him in and gave me time to do what I wanted. Because the, you know, every potential user that was to do stuff on the site couldn't do it except for me.
Right.
So it, that's how I ended up getting the time that I needed to both kick them out and make the updates to the site to be as secure as I possibly could.
Right. So did you just kind of upgrade everything or what was your...
Yeah, I actually upgraded everything even before I got their IP blocked. So I kicked them out the first time, upgraded everything, but they still had access. Like they were already
they were already in. Somehow.
Yeah. But once I then got their IP blocked and got them out of access, then I was able to take additional measures to, you know, get rid of them.
Right.
And then what you tend to run into as well is they get bored. Like hacking a website for your average hacker doesn't have that high value dollar-wise, that high of a value dollar-wise. So if it takes them more than just a little bit of time and they see some form of resistance, then they just go elsewhere. So they may have run into that, but I think I got the actual whatever the vulnerability was taken care of in the process of the updates that I made. But it was really interesting to see a real life hacker trying to take their steps to go about their business.
Yeah. I remember having one on a several years ago now, but it was on quite a large site, and that was that was probably like 3 days of me trying to work through it, and because it was
they were determined
quite easy. Right, they were pretty determined. It was quite easy to find the exploit and delete it, but then it would come back, and you know, because they would keep doing it, and they were getting smarter about, you know, using one exploit and then copying a file to somewhere else, and then when you delete the original one, then you know you don't realize there's been another one, things like that. So yeah, it's definitely kind of fairly stressful because you've got to you're kind of working under the clock when it comes to doing that as well, and that's, you know, I don't know, some people that helps with probably, some people maybe they just melt down when it gets to that. The blocking all access apart from your IP address is an interesting one. I think in this case, this was just too much of a large site to have blocked everything. But yeah, it's a good tip.
Yeah, this one was one. Props to SiteGround on that. They were quick on support to just instantly do what I asked in terms of blocking every other IP, which I could have done it through htaccess too. But I didn't think about that at the time. I was busy changing emails and passwords.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it worked. I don't know if it was the best way to go about it, but it worked. But what about in WordPress more broadly? Like if you see someone that gets hacked, and the way this normally happens in WordPress land, because WordPress core is secure. However, not everyone runs on the latest WordPress, and every release, pretty much, there are some form of security bugs that get fixed in the minor releases, and therefore there become these known exploits that are out for past releases if they don't update. And
yes,
these days auto updates for minor versions take care a lot of that, because that goes all the way back to 3.7. So unless you're specifically blocking auto updates, then core will be auto updated and therefore take care of most of those issues, but not all. I mean, it doesn't always run the auto update. So assume you get hacked. Now what?
Yeah. So the usually what I would look for first is like, I guess it depends what they've done. You know, it would be fairly normal if it's like you've now got, you know, some redirect via a script tag because it's put it into the post content of your database or something like that. So like there's the, like the first step would be to like make sure everything is up to date, audit all of your plugins to make sure they are secure. You can do that, you know, there you can, we should put a link to it. There's some kind of a site that tries to document security vulnerabilities that are found in plugins and things, so you can look there. So really want to make sure before you end up bother like going to try and like clean all your data or your site up and everything, like you just need to make sure that you've plugged the leakage wherever that is. And yeah, being up to date, looking through your plugins, like if I guess I kind of have a good idea of plugins that are likely to be sketchy, but if you see, you know, things that are doing, I guess kind of like, I don't know, not normal WordPress functionality. So like you've got PHP files that are called directly from the browser or something in a plugin, like that's quite a big red flag. Things that are like handling manually moving files or uploads, like things like that, is you've got to be very careful around that stuff. So if you really don't want to stop until you've found what the cause was, really, because you don't know that you've blocked it. And there's a very big difference between like, okay, yeah, I can see the code here and I can see where the exploit is, I'm going to fix that, rather than the like, okay, I've upgraded everything, feels okay now. Like hope is not a strategy.
Well, and when you upgrade everything, remind me if I'm wrong, but WordPress actually just replaces upgrade files now, right? It doesn't do a complete remove and replace. Especially for,
right,
or maybe that's just for core. Maybe plugins it does.
That's for a core.
Okay, so when you when you update a plugin, it's removing the entire previous plugin and adding the whole new one. So you should be getting the most secure version.
Yeah, but it is. If it were me, I'd probably look through to find a vulnerability and then see the update applying, you know, just so you know exactly what is happening. But it tends, you know, depends how kind of
urgent
lab coat scientific you want to be about it and everything. Exactly. So what, once you've kind of found hopefully where the hole is and you've plugged that, then really it's really a case of like quarantining your site and cleaning everything that could be bad. Now that can be a little difficult because depending on what the exploit was, it could have done anything. Like, it could have changed any of the WordPress core files. It could have changed any of the plugin files. It could have hidden stuff in your database where you don't know, and you know, things like that.
It could have put stuff on your root server.
Right, exactly.
That had not even in WordPress.
Right. So, this is quite a difficult part because I'm probably not going to be able to, like, say something that's going to be a magical fix for everything. Generally, though, practices are to make sure that your core files haven't changed. You can do that by just recopying core up or something like that, or you can get a little tricky and, you know, check the file modification times. If you do use Vaultpress has a really good feature where it will tell you that if any files are different or if there are any known vulnerabilities in the code base. There are probably other plugins that can do that kind of thing for you as well. Yeah, so in terms of your files, then that's really just like, you know, checking all of the files are what they should be. In the database, it's quite often that you'll probably find the data wherever it is. Like, quite a common thing is to inject bad data into comments or posts and things like that. Then it's a case of cleaning it out. Cleaning it out isn't fun sometimes, like, cause it might have, you know, screwed up with 50,000 posts or something like that and put something at the bottom. So, I mean, you may have to write some migration script to clean that up, or maybe you can restore from backup because maybe not much has changed or something. So there's I don't think there's any like fantastic one solution fits all. You've just got to kind of painstakingly go through, and it's not a fantastically fun job.
Yeah, file change detection is probably your first go-to. And security plugins do this, like iTheme Security, Vaultpress. Also, if you have a service like SiteLock or Securi or something like that, they have scripts that go through the common checks too. And a lot of those security services will also clean it up for you and maybe even, I think, give you a report on kind of where the vulnerability occurred. But yeah, that's finding out where in your files they're doing what they're doing is important. And it could be somewhere that's really difficult to find. So that's actually their goal.
Right.
Another benefit of a security service that's more SaaS oriented is they can actually scan the whole customer base and also share with other companies like what common vulnerabilities are. And that gives them a little more insight into finding what's going on. So those security services are pretty valuable.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's where like some of those, you know, hosted services or third-party services can really come into their own with doing all of that kind of legwork there with those checks. VaultPress, I know, is very good at having a database of exploits and then finding those in your code as well. So,
So speaking of vulnerabilities, you just posted about one.
Yeah, so literally as we've been on this conversation 10 seconds ago, a post that I've been working on today for Make WordPress Core detailing security vulnerabilities just been published. So I can now talk about it. So I'm glad that that actually got published at exactly the right time. So we could take a 5 minutes to explain what this is.
Please do. So Image Magic.
Image Magic, yeah. As some people may have heard, over the past 3 days, there's been a pretty large Image Magic security issue that was published. So if anybody doesn't know, Image Magic isn't a WordPress. It's not part of WordPress, I guess. It's an underlying library that is used for image resizing on some servers that run WordPress. So it's kind of like a security issue as if they were, you know, in the PHP extension or something like that. So it's not directly a WordPress security issue. It's just very pertinent to the WordPress ecosystem because it's so heavily used.
The name of this vulnerability is such a horrible dad joke.
Is Image Tragic. The library being called Image Magic. Obviously, we now have domains and brand names for security vulnerabilities. This one can be found at imagemagic.com.
Image tragic.com.
The insecure software can be found at imagemagic.com. But anyway, I think we decided to put a post up on make.wordpress.org just to kind of say this vulnerability image magic exists. This is how it relates to WordPress. This is probably what you should do, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The actual vulnerability is a pretty nasty one. It's very easily exploitable, and it allows for remote code execution. So for anybody that doesn't know, that means that you can basically, if you were to upload a specially crafted file to the WordPress admin and you were using Image Magic that was vulnerable, then you could delete files off the server or, you know, a huge amount of things, run any commands you want, basically. So by default, that's obviously not anybody that's going to your website because they can't upload files. It's only authors, editors, and admins that can upload files. It could be worse, I guess is what I'm saying. But it's still fairly important that if you're running your own hosting, then you should probably check if you have Image Magic. If you do, you should take the steps necessary to mitigate against that. If you're on a WordPress managed host, as far as I'm aware, most of the hosts have already taken steps to patch this, but probably is worth reaching out and checking. This was more of a just kind of advisory to, you know, WordPress folks that this issue is kind of still out there and it's ongoing. It's not a WordPress core issue. It's just a very good to know due to its kind of widespreadness.
But because this is on Image Magic and because a lot of hosts use Image Magic and WordPress, it then makes WordPress a nice second place to go, right?
Right, exactly. That's the thing with WordPress being such a popular piece of software, and people know that, you know, maybe, I don't know, 30% of websites have Image Magic or something like that.
That's nasty. It's a lot of times for somebody on the outside to identify, hey, how important is this? It's really difficult to tell, because sometimes it's like, only an admin can do this in a certain situation. So there's obviously few people on your website that can actually make this exploit happen. Other times it's any subscriber logged in, any logged in user, but sometimes it's like literally anyone. And one of the ways to identify this, I love this acronym, but it's a DREAD score. Are you familiar with this?
I'm not.
So Security, they're one of the more well-known security companies out there, and they're definitely heavily involved in WordPress. They apply this score to vulnerabilities, and it stands for damage, reproducibility, exploitability, affected users, and discoverability.
Okay.
And each of these has like a number, 0 to 10. And depending on what the number is, you kind of add that up and you can determine how nasty is this. If your final score is a 3, when you add all these up, then it's not very good. If it's a, if it's a 10, then it's super high. This is the average of these mm-hmm. 0 to 10 numbers. And that basically just helps you identify like, hey, any unauthenticated user can do this, or it only takes like 2 clicks instead of like a super long line of things that you have to do. So I really like when people, or when somebody like security applies a score to an
vulnerability. Yeah, it makes it a lot easier just to assess.
Yeah, so you know, like, how much do I need to freak out and how soon do I need to freak out? Because sometimes I feel like you have a little bit of boy who cried wolf syndrome.
Yeah, especially, like, if you don't know the intricacies, it's like, oh, well, people are always saying security issues, like, I don't need to worry. So the thing is, I think people are worried about understating it because they want to, like, I want people to be secure and update and everything. This is primarily something that can only be exploited by authors and above. So, like, I dare say, if you trust those users to be secure and not randomly upload random files, maybe not. But really, it's quite easy to send somebody a picture that, they don't realize has something bad in it, and then they upload it. So it's not, terrible, but I think that this one will be rearing its head for a while because it's a fix that really has to happen at the server level, ideally. There's plenty of servers that kind of get by unpatched out there.
Or people forget about or don't really manage the website anymore. The host stinks. Yep. Who knows what? It reminds me a little bit of the Tim Thumb one, because when the Tim Thumb hack probably is still happening some today, years later, just because of abandoned websites that never update the underlying software. So the most important thing you can do is update stuff. WordPress core doesn't really have a lot of frequent vulnerabilities, but usually every release, like, you obviously want to make sure you're updating the minor versions as soon as possible. Major versions are purposefully released to be not fixing security vulnerabilities out of the gate. So you should be able to go, say, from like WordPress 4.5 to WordPress 4.6 in your own time. A week, you could wait a week. But if it's WordPress 5.1, then you want to do that right away.
Yeah, and they're very low risk in terms of breaking anything. So really just...
Mm-hmm. And then literally every single one of the things that we've discussed in terms of what to think about with WordPress core security and vulnerabilities, every single one of those also applies to plugins especially, but also themes.
Core plugin themes all have exactly the same potential for damage. They all have the same capabilities. So they're all equally as important in terms of all of the practices of best practices for security.
And again, these are lazy hackers that want to hit as many sites as possible. So the likelihood is that they'll utilize plugins that are extremely heavily used and easy to access in order to try to squeeze their vulnerabilities in. Like, so if you have plugins that are kind of the top end, you know, like big e-commerce form, SEO plugins, those types of things, those are the most likely to be targeted, and those are the plugins that you want to make sure that you're keeping up to date more than any other. Mm-hmm. Although you want to keep all your stuff up to date, you really don't want to let some of those plugins with millions of installs get way out of date, because the likelihood is at least some of those updates are fixing security issues. Just looking at the website you were thinking about, I think, was wpvulndb.com.
Yeah, I think so.
They show a list of the latest WordPress plugin and theme vulnerabilities, and they're pretty interesting. I mean, there was one just the other day that was pretty bad this isn't my intention to call them out or anything, but it was for Ninja Forms, and they had this clever thing where you enter the Konami code, like the, you know, like the gamer code.
Yeah.
And then that allowed you to install the new version of their plugin that's not quite out yet. And the new version is what had, like, the one that's not out, didn't have a final security sweep. So there was a bug there. So, like, someone figured out how to hack it, and they did this whole rundown of how you do it. And they have that listed. So that one was a good example of a popular plugin that had a difficult to see at first, but you know, significant vulnerability attached to it. And it's a classic example of why we need to keep our stuff up to date. And in that case, and this brings me into maybe the last thing we can end with, is forced upgrades from WordPress.org. So that's what they ended up doing with NinjaForms. Is it was, I think, something that you could do as an verified user, so it could be anybody that does it, or just about anybody. And so WordPress.org, the plugin repository, ran forced upgrades on NinjaForms across the board. So what happens in a situation like that is the plugin maker, and this has happened in the past with Jetpack, with EDD, with Yoast, all sorts of plugins. There was this one really big vulnerability that it was basically discovered that, like, a dozen top plugins had the same exact vulnerability, because there was an expectation that I think it was a sanitization function was doing something that it wasn't actually doing. So WordPress.org did updates for all of them. And when they do this, you may have, say your last three major versions are 2.0, 2.1, and 2.2, then they'll create a 2.0.1, 2.1.1, 2.2.1, or whatever. And they'll patch a minor version for each major version going back as long as the vulnerability goes back. And that way the forced upgrade only upgrades that one thing. It doesn't force you onto a new major version if you're not already on it. Because there are times where people are legitimately not on the major version yet because there's an upgrade routine or whatever that they need to also go through. So some people are iffy about forced upgrades, but I actually think they're really good, because it probably keeps lots and lots of websites safe that otherwise wouldn't be.
Especially forced upgrades for minor versions where stuff is purposefully not, you know, changing, then, you know, there's only good things that can come from that, really.
Yep. And I guess as a final note, Joe, are you on the security team or?
No, I don't believe so. Okay. But all of the core committers have access to the security room in the WordPress Slack.
Okay, but if people email, if you have a vulnerability or whatever in core WordPress, or even in a major plugin, you want to contact the author privately and securely first. And if that's WordPress core, then you can actually email security@wordpress.org, and that's how you'd want to handle it. Because one of the worst things that happens is what's called a zero day, where the vulnerability comes out into the public and the author is otherwise not heard of this vulnerability, and therefore hackers can implement the hacking routine to take advantage of the vulnerability. And they can do that all while the software author is trying to figure out the best way to fix it and get that deployed. So the way to handle these...
Responsible disclosure is the buzzword for...
Responsible disclosure. There you go. Thank you. Have you ever been involved in a situation where responsible disclosure was going on?
Yeah, I get to see a lot of that. I'm not really the best person to be acting on it, but... Yeah, it's like it's incredibly easy for information to leak. Like it could be that the person that discovered it, it's definitely happened in WordPress before where there's been bad communication, so they didn't think that they were getting answers, so they ended up going public with it. That's kind of the worst kind. But then, you know, there's just things like if a library upstream maybe is fixing something, and they release the update uncoordinated or something. So they just push out a security fix, but then everybody else that's using that library didn't know about it ahead of time, then they haven't switched. So then somebody, a hacker sees that, oh, this library just had this security update and I see all these other products that are using it haven't upgraded. So they must be using the insecure version because they can see the, you can see all of this in open source. You can pretty much know what the vulnerability is based off of what the new version is and the code that changed. It's very easy to accidentally just have leakages like that when everybody's trying to keep kind of everything fairly under wraps until it's kind of like time to go and release everything. So I've definitely seen that a lot.
Yeah, those are really interesting. The my favorite under wraps ones ever was the, and I think I coined this term, but with the Trojan emoji.
Yeah.
In WordPress core, that was a situation where there was a security vulnerability that was pretty long running, spanned 2 years. And the final fix included a database upgrade routine for altering the type of data that could be stored in the database. And the whole fix was done under the guise of enabling emoji support because it was just this big blob of code that not that many people were paying attention to because they thought it was just in order to enable emoji, which is a particular type of character. Because UTF-8 tables don't allow the 4-byte characters.
A very complicated area of WordPress that nobody was probably going to go digging in when they saw code was changing around there.
Yeah. So in WordPress 4.2, they added like 1,000 lines of code into, it was wpdb.php. And it ended up, in addition to getting the super nice bonus of emoji in WordPress, it also turned out to be a massive vulnerability fix on... the way WordPress handles database stuff in MySQL. So that one was a really interesting one and played out for a really long time without being exposed for what it was. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, that's about all I got on security. You got anything else?
No, I'm feeling pretty good about covering the kind of basics there. I think we've done pretty well.
If you do want to learn more, there are quite a few good resources on security. I'll try to link up some of my favorites in the show notes. That's it. So you can go to postatus.com/club and sign up. And Joe, where should people go for you this week?
As usual, they should refuse to follow me on Twitter at @Joe_Hoyle.
Oh, and two more things. One, adayofrest.hm is going to be fun. So if you're interested
in... I think we launched something yesterday?
Yep, it's live. So there's a site redesign on the A Day of Rest website for Boston, which is going to be in October.
Adayofrest.hm. Oh, yeah, I just loaded it up now.
It's nice looking.
This is all built on the REST API with React again.
Indeed. So go to that website. One day we'll have to talk about maybe REST API security and wrangling. that would be good. And I had one other announcement. I know. Oh, I know what it is. We've never asked anybody to rate this podcast. Do you know that? Actually, I asked people to rate it one star one time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it had come up, and I think, yeah, it didn't produce any great ratings, but that might be why.
No, but it was because I asked them to rate us one star because we went to
them. Exactly.
So you need to go rate us 5 stars because...
Well, whereabouts do people rate us?
In iTunes. I just
led you into that perfectly.
It's so troublesome to do, so I apologize, but if you take the 90 seconds, I'm guessing, it's going to take you to open iTunes, search the Post Status Draft podcast, click on reviews, and then leave us a review. We would greatly appreciate it. And only do it if you're going to rate us 5 stars, because we're awesome. Exactly. And we need to...
I remembered one other quick plug, and that is to mention Ryan's name, because he's literally sending Morse code to me from across the room on his mobile phone. I don't speak Morse code, but anyway, I just wanted to get his name into the podcast. Sorry, Brian.
Ryan McHugh always needs his name in the podcast. He's like the Waldo of the Post Status Draft podcast. You got to find his name. And I guess I'll tell you this. If you rate Post Status 5 stars in iTunes, we will mention you on the next podcast. How about that?
Ooh, that's pretty good. It's a pretty good trade.
Yeah. Well, we might even say the name of your website. All right. Thanks for joining us.
If you can work it into a review naturally.
Right. Only if it's natural. Okay. Have a good one.
Okay. Thanks.